Hi, everybody. This is Eve Harrow and Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. It is August 7th, 2016, the third day of Av, 5776. And I have on the line with me a friend who is a farmer, an ecological farmer in the Land of Israel. Alon Zimmerman, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello.
So, even though it's early morning for most of us, for you, it's probably almost time for lunch. I know how hard you and your wife, Rachel, work on your farm, the Zimmerman farm in Itamar, just outside of Shechem, way, way up in the Shomron. But having brought people to you and come by and going to come by again at the end of August to your farm, I know that you have a, you're not just a farmer. You have like a specific way of farming and a specific way of looking at the land. So can you tell the listeners like what it is that drives you to get up in the morning and work, the two of you, like I've never seen two human beings work, really from dawn to dusk?
Well, first of all, I feel that we have a blessing. To be able to work the land is a merit. And when the prophets promised us many years back, 2,000 years ago, that there'd be an ingathering of the Jewish people, and the beginning sign of the redemption would be the land of Israel giving its fruit, the blessing, the hills of Israel. That's what was really the motivating force behind everything we're doing, because we feel that we have a mission for not just us, but for ourselves, for the whole Jewish people. Basically, I feel like I'm one of the Japanese soldiers that wasn't told that World War II was over, and we're still pushing along as long as we have strength in our bodies to do the function that we have to do. And that's it. We feel it's a mission. And I'm fighting. We go house to house and sell every day our wares. One pocket for embarrassment and the other pocket for money. And anything to just keep us going on the land.
So most of the people listening have not been to your farm. I'm trying to get them to visualize. That's the difficulty with radio and with audio, is that there is no visual. So right at the entrance to Itamar, just in the area around Biblical Shechem, you and your wife, Rachel, have set up your farm, raised 10 children. And what is it that you do there? What kind of farm? What do you grow? What did you grow? And what are you doing now? And how is it like sustainable in the sense that you guys could do it on your own if you had to, if you didn't have to lean on the electricity grid and everything else that the rest of us just so take for granted? Like, what is the idea behind this farm?
As I'm talking to you, I'm pulling weeds out of my strawberries. But the idea behind this farm, and initially when we first started this farm many years back, 30 years ago, it was based on doing tomatoes for export. Together with Rav Ray Kanati from Mir Kazarov, a student of Rav Tzvi Yehuda, he sold his apartment in Jerusalem, in a very good area, to get the initial funding so that we could start doing farming, tomatoes for export. My father, Zechon Olivracha, also supplied the other half of the money, because none of the government sources would help us initially. And we started tomatoes for export, which was part of Agrexco's plan to export tomatoes, and we started that way. For about 7-8 years, I was working in export of tomatoes and all sorts of organic vegetables. And gradually, I worked for the local market until the first Antifada. Mm-hmm. At the first Antifada, that was the Arab, the first Arab uprising.
1987, 1988.
Mm-hmm. Right. We were stuck with a huge amount of products, of tomatoes and things like that. And my wife said, no problem.
Because the roads weren't safe, right? Because you couldn't get it out.
They weren't safe. Yeah. One day I took my stuff. We went through like roadblocks, and the truck got shot at, and We even had rocks thrown at us by Jews who thought we were Arabs, and Arabs threw rocks at us thinking we were Jews. It was quite an experience, but we came to the conclusion it was too difficult to send the fruits and vegetables out. So at that stage, my wife said, let's make products. And she started making tomato sauce, and we started making strawberry jam. And from that time onwards, and we also started drying fruit. From that time onwards, we realized that the growing could also be done to make a product. And that would help us circumvent having to throw out any second quality stuff and all that.
So you weren't going to deal with perishable. So you weren't going to deal with perishables because it was just too difficult.
Yes,
okay.
Initially, that's how it started, and gradually the whole thing evolved. Also, from my background in America, I learned a lot about ecology, and I was in the Audubon Society and the Sierra Club, and so I had a very tremendous leaning towards an ecological approach to life. And so we started looking at making our farm more self-supportive. Today, we've come much farther with that idea. We have now a methane gas converter where we take all the waste of the cows that we accumulate, and we use that to produce methane gas, which we use for cooking. How did we get to that? Initially, about 3 or 4 years ago, we had a huge snowstorm, and all the hothouses that I had that I built over 25 years collapsed. We lost about 500,000 shekels, which was not recompensated to us by the government because we didn't have insurance. So we had to just force ourselves to figure out how to, just like we had overcome the first Arab uprising with the rock throwing and all that, we were faced with another catastrophe. And we did that by continuing to increase the amount of the basket of products that we sell. We're now selling sourdough breads and all sorts of, and granola and all sorts of wonderful products directly to the local people.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, what we did is we started from doing export, going halfway around the world, sending our stuff to all sorts of people that want to eat organic stuff. And gradually, we realized that the main parnasa, the main source of income is our next door neighbor, not sending it across the world, but just having a localized way of selling our stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go on.
No, it's just that so many people, when they think of Israel, they think of high tech and all of the little computer chips and in everybody's cell phone and everybody's computer and so many medications and just so many things, agriculture around the world, where the know-how, and a lot of people don't even know this, but some do, the know-how comes out of Israel. And what you're saying, though, is that part of our return to our ancestral homeland is also learning how to live simply, in a way, maybe that they did before, where it's based on community, not a global community, but the real life community of the neighbor next door, and people being able to supply each other what they need in order to have a balanced life. Is that part of what you're doing here?
Of course. I believe that Rev Cook said that in the future, the majority of the Jewish people will be farmers. And that seems almost like a ridiculous thing to say when you look at the way people make a living today, mostly on high tech and all sorts of bureaucratic jobs working for the government. But the truth of the matter is, if we believe in the prophecies that Hashem will take the exiles and then gather them after 2,000 years, which we are now witnesses to with our own life, then we should also believe that ultimately the land will be separated into nachalot, into inheritance portions, each one according to his family and his tribe. when that comes, everyone will have, I don't know, 5-6 dunam spread evenly all over the country of Israel, and we'll be having to bring bikurim to the Holy Temple.
Mm, to bring the tithing and the first fruits to the temple, right?
Right, and we're going to have to support ourselves from the land. It will the economy will switch over to being mainly an agrarian economy that will be based on our connection to the land, and not bringing things in from cheap slave labor from all over the world. And that's what I believe that we are trying to show also, that a Jew can make a living by being connected to the land and being supported from the land, not just living on the land as like you live in a hotel or something. So that's one of the ideas. And in order to do that, we have to apply concepts of low-tech to the agriculture, where on the one hand, we have an economically feasible system. On the other hand, it has to be self-perpetuating. In other words, when a Jewish family got the inheritance portion, it was his for all the generations. Even if he was a horrible farmer after, say, he went into debt and he had to sell his land, every 50 years, the land goes back to the same family. So it had a way of correcting. There was no such thing as a feudal system where people were enslaved, being poor paupers for hundreds and hundreds of years, maybe 1 year, even today.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the idea, that we find a way to hold the land, to maintain its productivity for all future generations. And that's the idea of part of what we're trying to do here today. We also have, like, I discovered with the cows, each cow produces enough gas methane to run all my cooking needs on a daily basis. Plus, each cow produces enough fertilizer to fertilize one dunam of land, whether it's tomatoes, cucumbers, or strawberries. I'm walking in a strawberry patch as I'm talking to you that is filled with shoots, new plants, and it had a wonderful crop this year. I'm still picking. I think I'm the only one in the country that's still picking strawberries right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think there are too many strawberries growing around Israel now. That's amazing.
It's an amazing type. They're also sweet. Like in the middle of the summer, they don't lose their sweetness. They're still sweet. In any case, everything that we've done, we've seen a tremendous blessing. But the idea would be that you have a system that you utilize low-tech, supplying your own energy from the wind that's readily available here and the sunlight and the gas methane, utilizing all of these things together to increase your kalkaliyut, economic feasibility. Instead of producing more and being bigger and bigger and bigger and having more expenditures, you take the same earning and you just cut back all the time the outputs, the money that you have to your costs. If you cover your energy costs, if you cover your feed costs, if you cover your transportation costs from your own farm, then you can make a relatively small amount of money and be economically feasible. And it's also not taxable. You don't have to triple the amount of taxes. You just make money by being self-supportive.
So where do you and where do you get your water from? Because in Israel right now, we're in the middle of our 6-month dry period where it doesn't rain. So what do you do now?
Well, I am not at the stage where I'm collecting water at this, but I do have a pond during the winter where we collect the rainwater and we can utilize it at least 1,000 cubic meters. We can also grow fish in it. Between what I'm actually doing and what exists in the farm, there's a lot of broken dreams, a lot of hopes. But there are certain things that are happening, and mostly thanks to my wife. Everything that I have here is in her merit. She's figured out how to make the most wonderful products
she has.
The things that we have. And so that... But I haven't forgotten the goal, and we're aiming somehow to bring ourselves to the realization of this goal, because we've been doing it for the last 30 years, and until Hashem, until God stops giving me energy, I can will continue until the very end.
Do you have other farmers that come visit you? For example, Mario Levy, who started off organic farming, also a religious farmer from the Beit Shean area. He from Kibbutz Eliyahu. He brought organic farming to Israel years ago, and he ended up teaching many farmers the method, and that is spread all over the country. Have you been approached by other farmers, by people who have, you know, small ranches as you do, to teach that idea, your ideas?
We've been, first of all, Mario was the one who started the organic farming here. He helped us get started with organic farming, and we were doing export of organic strawberries and organic cherry tomatoes and you name it. We were mm-hmm. doing it, and it was all the merit of Mario Levy, who started this whole thing.
May he live to be 120. I think he's in his 90s now. Yeah. Incredible guy. Yeah.
But I've subsequently left the organic, and I'm now more on an approach of, how do you say, self-sustaining farming.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not, the emphasis isn't on getting all sorts of certifications and exporting the stuff to the other side of the world, but the emphasis on just producing as cheaply and as a higher quality stuff as you can from your local, from systems that are self-contained. Whether it's producing your own fertilizer and feeding all your plants with it. Because in order to have it organically certified, you have to take it and get all sorts of tests, and you have to go through all sorts of bureaucracy, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So don't have the ability to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you and Rachel barter with some of the people around you? For example, I know from personal experience that in the area you have people who are pressing the most outrageous olive oil and wine and honey, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all kinds of different farms that, as you said, the blessing of the land of Israel is being shown literally through the food. I would imagine that in the days of yore, that's what people would do. If you produced a lot of one thing, you traded with your neighbor for what he had more than he could possibly eat. Have you gotten to that point yet? Is that a goal?
I don't try and do it, but sometimes it happens. Most of the times it doesn't. We're still quite far from that, but I hope and pray that we will get to it, because I believe that what you're saying is correct, that everything has to be done locally. In other words, more of a bartering. The person, I don't have enough chicken manure, so the chicken farmer gives it to me, or I don't have olive oil, the guy who has olive oil gets bread from me. That type of thing is done a little bit, but it has to be done a lot more in the future. Another thing I wanted to say, though, in the same line, is if we went back to the situation of inheritance portions, there would be no foreign labor, because the whole right. family would be like a chamula, like a clan, living in one area, and they'd be helping each other. The manpower would be supplied by the family itself, or the neighboring families, your cousins or your uncles, and we'd all be working together. There'd be no need to spend about 30% of what is being produced in agriculture in order to build neighborhoods in Thailand and China and all sorts of places. So today, if for instance the foreign labor has left Israel, mm-hmm. there would be no fruit, vegetables, or milk on the shelves. Basically, the percentage of people being farmers today is a minuscule, maybe 0.5% or something. So the situation has to change.
So it's not just sustainable farming, it's to a great degree a sustainable, like a self-sustainable existence, where we're not dependent on others for the basic things, like eating.
Right. Instead of going to be a consumer society, we have to be going back to being a productive society where people produce their own fruits and vegetables. Because when you produce your own fruits and vegetables, you also live a much healthier life. You don't have to spend an hour every morning in a traffic jam, and an hour every morning, every afternoon in a traffic jam, getting back and forth to work. You don't have to go to an exercise gym to try and get rid of your stomach that you have sitting all day in front of a computer. Instead, your very activities on a daily basis keeps you in good physical condition. You eat good, healthy food, and you live a much happier life.
See, for many people in the West, and I imagine most people listening, they're thinking, oh, this is sweet, but he's not going to get rich off of this. He's not going to be able to take his vacation to wherever and, you know, buy the big screen TV and all the things that for so many people in the world is what the sign of success is. When I listen to you, when I come and visit you, and when I just live here in the land of Israel, it's such a different mindset. Most people, when they think of Israel, they think of maybe our strong army and, again, the high tech. They don't think of people who have returned to the heart of our homeland and are actually living in the land, not on the land. Most of us are living on the land of Israel, not in the land of Israel. And what you, Rachel, are doing is living in the land of Israel. And I can't help but think that there are two major biblical curses that are now being overturned. One of them is obviously the sin of the spies, which I talk about a lot, which is that the land of Israel, the fruit of the land of Israel is so big and so frightening, and it's a reason to not go in. And what we're doing now is saying, no, the fruit is a blessing. And leading up into the 9th of Av, which the original sin was that sin of the spies, it's so meaningful to be talking about this. But there's the original place where we went wrong, Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, the punishment was that you'll be working, you know, with the sweat of your brow, you're going to pull the bread up out of your field. And what you're saying, Alon Zimmerman, is that's not necessarily a curse, or we can look at it as a curse, or we can look at it as actually a blessing because it means that it's our hands that sustain us. How would you see that now, given how hard you work and what you're doing now with your life?
It's very simple. Like in the ethics of our father, the Shmaya, there's one of the Tanaim, one of the people of the oral Torah transmitted from generation to generation, said, "Ohevet amalacha, sneat the rabbanim, for al tifadal reshut." Translated, it means love difficult labor, hate the rabbanut, and don't meet with the authorities. In other words,
wow.
Basically what he's saying is the opposite of what we have today. Today, physical labor is looked down upon. The motivating force in people's minds is how to make as much money with the least amount of effort. In other words, some guy, the chosen few and sit on Globex and manipulate the market. They make trillions of dollars, and yet they do nothing more than a phone call or playing with their computer. So it's the antithesis of what Shmaya said. On the other hand, on the other side of the coin, a person who works and he has pleasure, it says, Chavivim, Kav Meshalom, Esu Kavim, Tesha Kavim, Chavaro. It says a person loves the fruits of his labor, one kilo of his fruits of labor, than 10 kilos of someone else's. In other words, it's not the quantity or how many zeros after the one. It's how much you get intrinsic pleasure from your labors. You know that you're doing straight labors. You're not stealing, and you're not manipulating, and you're not pulling the wool over people's eyes or pretending you're Las Vegas. The whole world economy is now like Las Vegas.
Right.
Going back to the land and having physical labor on the land and producing the fruits of your labor is the healthiest and happiest thing you can do. What does it help? What good does it have to be a multimillionaire and have three or four divorces or have your kids in all sorts of horrible situations if you have kids at all? The people are not happy. It's not a happy way of living. So I'm saying that Shmaya, this ancient Jewish sage, said that Ohevet amalacha, he said, love physical labor. It's not a curse. You're not a servant. You're doing a mitzvah. It's the mitzvah of settling the land. And that's the biggest joy of a Jew, is to do a mitzvah.
Why does he say, just to go off on a tangent, why does he say, hate the rabbis, out of curiosity?
First of all, I don't think that his means the rabbis, as we say. It means the authorities.
Yeah.
Not. I mean, in other words, today, if you look at the globalized economy, in order for a person to make lots of money, he has to hate labor. He has to do as much, make as much possible money by not doing anything except playing with his computer.
Mm-hmm.
And how does he know what to do? He has inside information. You know, he's like, he's got the inside information. He's the closest one to the big decision makers that sit in their ivory towers. And that's the becoming wealthy. It has nothing to do with truth and everything to do with lie. So that's how I look at it, that basically to live a simple working life is the antithesis of this system that's being built on never-ending debt. By the way, I've learned a little bit about economies.
Right.
The Keynesian system of making, as Maynard Keynes used to say, you know, I can make rocks into wheat. In other words, I can make something that has no value and turn it into wheat. And so through the derivative system, they paper money and they turn commodities into valueless things. And it's all propaganda. People believe that the professor who gets a Nobel Peace Prize and he's paid by the Central Bank of Sweden and tells everyone that you should have lots of debt and that's the way to work. That's the God-given truth. People are completely brainwashed.
Maybe we need to go back to what really is the God-given truth, which is, of course, the Tanakh in every way, and find the wisdom in there. Before we sign off, and I know that you have so much to do, and it really was hard for you to agree to this interview because you are so busy all the time, can you give us a little bit about your background, how you ended up in Itamar with the life that you're now so, you know, so gratified to be living?
My whole life is actually quite a miracle. I mean, I was born in America in the middle of a suburban area. I grew up as a sports, how do you say, a jock, playing sports and surfing, karate, football. And I grew up only with non-Jews. But my name was Alon, and it was named after one of the first pilots in the Israeli Air Force, an Israeli pilot who was killed in the War of Independence. He was my father's best friend. My father fought in the War of Independence. And he was, Morty Alon was killed when he was trying to save his plane over Sde Dov, which is an airplane. In any case, I was given a Jewish name. And my father made sure that I would stay home on the Jewish holidays. And right before the Yom Kippur War, we were given a free plane ticket to come to the birthday party of the 101 squadron, which my father was instrumental in starting. And from that time onwards, a spark of Zionism was lit in my heart. And I connected myself to the Jewish people. Ultimately, I came and made Aliyah. I was on Young Judea Year course. I eventually made Aliyah. I was in the Lebanese War. Got a bullet shot through my helmet by a Syrian ambush, commando ambush. I was shot in the arm. I was wounded in a terrorist attack in Beit Hadassah. I had quite a few things. I saw my life given to me on a platter many, many times. So basically, I feel with whatever time I have, I have to try and live a life of fulfilling the ideals I believe in. And that's basically my background. I have a wonderful family. I took care of my parents when they came over until they passed away in the house. My mother lived to 101 and my father to 90. And I was taking care of them. I didn't believe in sending them to an old age home. And I have 10 kids, 10 grandchildren, and 10 cows.
May you have more of all of them. Well, maybe not the kids. Okay. Alon Zimmerman, thank you so much for joining me today. If any of you are in Israel on August 28th or should come to Israel just for the opportunity, I'm going to be with Rachel and Alon Zimmerman up in the Shomron that morning. You can see for yourselves what it means to live a full Jewish life on the land, in the Shomron, living a life of Torah, living a life connected to the people, to the faith, to the land in every single way. It may not be how you envision what the Jews are doing here in Israel, and that's exactly why you need to come and see it. Because people like Alon and Rachel Zimmerman, for me, are really the ultimate in what it means that Hashem brought us home. So thank you so much. Go back to your weeding. And thank you so much, really, Alon, for taking the time to speak with us today. And I just want to wish everybody out there a safe week. It's the 9 days. Weird and sometimes not wonderful things happen during this time of the year. So just take a little extra care of yourselves, everybody. Eve Harrow, write to me, eve@thelandofisrael.com. Have a wonderful, wonderful week, everybody. Again, take care. Goodbye for now.
Shalom.
This is Eve Harrow, host of Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. My maternal grandparents, Grandpa Morris and Grandma Lily, came to the United States from Russia over 100 years ago. They belonged to the Mizrahi movement way before there was even a state of Israel. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement.
When I was growing up, I would read the books in the second half of the Old Testament. And sometimes I would get a little bit lost in all those prophecies of Jeremiah, Isaiah, and so on. That all changed the day I stepped foot in the land of Israel. As I harvested grapes and olives and more on the mountains of Samaria, the words of the prophets came to life right before my very eyes. Today you could be a part of this phenomena too. I am Caleb Waller, and I'm inviting you to step into the pages of prophecy by joining us in Israel. Go to our website, that is hayovel.com, H-A-Y-O-V-E-L.com, to connect to this amazing opportunity.